Today's episode of Jeff Schwartz's Smarter Than You is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can even spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks at any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, and Tesla, for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimums. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners get started with a free stock by going to jeff.robinhood.com. That's Jeff with a G, G-E-O-F-F.robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice, a recommendation, or a solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield or uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank.
They must not know who I am yet. They're going to find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that's in KC. That's KC. Ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told them when I got here, this is going to change. Look at this. We're the best in the world.
From The Athletic, I'm Jeff Schwartz. The Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl.
Woo, Mitch!
So excited. I might have shed some tears the other night. I'm not going to lie. The Niners are meeting them, who also, by the way, my childhood team. So excited for this matchup. And Tom Brady is headed to Vegas with the most reliable source of all time giving us that information. It's Tuesday, January 21st, and this is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. Welcome in, everyone. What a weekend. Welcome in, Gabe Goodman. Gabe, I was so emotionally drained from watching the Chiefs win the other night that A, I did shed some tears when it was all over, and B, it took me like a day to recover. I'm good today. Today I'm good. Yesterday, ooh, I was tired yesterday, buddy.
Oh, man. Well, a big mazel tov to Mitch Schwartz. I think you tweeted this. Tell me if this is accurate. First two Jewish brothers to have played in Super Bowls? Do we have that
no,
right?
It was more of a mock. I kind of messed that up. It was more of a mock that I never played in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It was,
well, it was okay. Like the, so it was supposed I didn't to, know it was how you meant
to,
it.
It was supposed to say like the first... I said it wrong, but no, it was the first, you know, because there's our book, Eat My Schwartz. I don't even know if it's out anymore. You know, the headline is like the first pair of Jewish brothers in the NFL since 1923.
Yeah.
So I was trying to play on that. We're like, oh yeah, one of us got the Super Bowl.
All so right. Well, so then, well. So my Twitter feed got a bad stat. I credited you with having been in a Super Bowl when fact, technically you have not been. Well, I figured you've played on a few teams and you might have been part of a team that was there. I know you haven't told us stories of pancaking someone in a Super Bowl. I just thought maybe,
no,
yeah, you were
unfortunately.
On that. All right. Well, so yeah. Mitch is there. Mitch will win for the Schwartz family. We hope. Let's start there. Let's talk about the Chiefs. I was also emotional. It was fun. I was rooting for them because of you. You're always objective about them. In fact, you've picked against them many times on this show. So
yeah.
I see a lot of people on Twitter calling you a homer, coming at you with crazy conspiracy theories. I'm sure we'll touch on it. Let me start by talking about sort of how good they looked on Sunday and what this means for them. And one idea I have that I think could make them even better to ensure this victory. So obviously, you know, personal for you with your brother,
yeah.
Personal for you with the coach. Andy Reid is the guy you've played for and called your favorite coach of all time. The takes are super hot this week, as they always are Super Bowl week. I'm going to skip past people saying Mahomes is already the GOAT. That's too absurd for us to debate right here.
Max Kellerman, thank you.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say. What we saw on Sunday tells me Patrick Mahomes should run more. We need to see him use his legs, and it's not just because of the highlight for the touchdown at the end of the first half. That was amazing, but when he runs, the offense seems to open up. The defense is never prepared for him. He's a little bit faster than people realize, and lately, the last two games at least, he's been doing a lot with his legs. I think the only way to keep this Niners defense from having their ears pinned back is to have him be able to move around a little bit, maybe even drop a play or two for him.
Yeah, he led the Chiefs in rushing for, again, the second week in a row in the playoffs. That actually is a tad bit concerning as we head to the Super Bowl. So the reason why Pat Mahomes is so great at scrambling is a couple things. And then we saw it on Sunday. And I'm going to actually make a video of this. If you go to my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz, when the coach's film comes out, it's really interesting. The Titans basically did the exact same game plan defensively they tried against the Ravens, where they dropped eight guys into coverage. One of the eight was a spy, right? A guy just looking at Pat Mahomes. and they rush three guys at Pat like they did Lamar Jackson. The difference a little bit is that their rush lanes were pretty terrible by the Titans, and so allowed Pat to escape. And then, unlike Lamar, who as soon as he broke the pocket was immediately looking to run the football, Pat Mahomes always looks to throw the football first. And even when he doesn't, and the touchdown run is this example, he hit the hesitation of him look like he's attempting to throw the football is the reason why he's such a great runner. So it's not just that he can run, it's that he actually passes the ball more often when he breaks contain. We saw the long touchdown pass to Watkins. That's what he did. There was a spy, forced him to the right. The spy came late like usual. Boom, ball gone, touchdown. The touchdown on the touchdown run, which is an amazing play, it changed the game right there. If the Titans go in the half 17-17, much different game in my opinion. Pat breaks contain. I took a picture of this. Most quarterbacks outside of maybe three or four would have been tackled. You see Jarrell Casey running him, I believe. You see Evans, 54, running at him. And what Pat does is he does a subtle thing. This is what he does great, in my opinion, with everything he does. Little movements here and there that are really, they're not taught. They're innate. They're things that he's either picked up along the way or just because he's a baller, he knows how to do these in certain situations. So as he's running to the sidelines, all he does is slowly turn toward the field, just a little bit toward the field, and kind of raise his arm a tiny bit to make it look like, okay, he's going to throw the football.
Yeah.
And 54 in front of him hesitates for just a half second because A, he wants to hit him because he stopped, and B, you can't hit him late either, right? So he kind of has to make sure that if he hits him, it's at the right time, he doesn't get a late hit. And that hesitation right there, Pat had no intention to throw the football, let Pat break free and get to the sidelines and get down the sideline. He is faster than people think. But Gabe, he doesn't look to run that often. When it presents himself, especially against man coverage or a spy he can beat, he's gone. And the Niners don't play a lot of spy coverages. They're going to rush four, so they always do. They're going to have to make sure to keep him in the pocket. There's a way to rush to keep him in the pocket. They're going to try to do that double like they did. And even on that play, there was no one open. If you watch, they bracketed Kelsey, they bracketed Hill. No one's open. But Pat is just a special player. And when he's healthy like he is now, when he's feeling himself like he always is, and I love his confidence, right? He's quietly confident, right? He's not Baker Mayfield. He's not brash about it. He just goes about his business. He's a great football player. He's very humble. He's a great teammate. He obviously loves the game. And he makes big plays in these situations. So I'm not sure that running the football is the exact right thing to say. But I think when there's an opportunity to break the pocket, he is good at doing that. But mostly because he's really going to throw the football out of the pocket, and it makes defenders hesitate. They don't know if he's going to throw the ball or run the football.
Okay, that was a very helpful explanation for me. That clarifies some of what I was watching. I guess what I'll ask then as a follow-up, and we can cover other parts of this game, is, you know, if you design it that way, though, don't we think that the 49ers defense, their greatest strength is how athletic they are, how fast they are, how hard they get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
But they're young and inexperienced at a lot of positions. Couldn't Patrick Mahomes just take advantage of that eagerness? Couldn't they draw up a few, call them bootlegs, ways to get him into the position like he was in on that scramble? Couldn't that work?
Yeah, but they don't need to do that because, first of all, they don't run the ball enough, so they can't really bootleg. Like, there's no way to fake that. But I will say the way the Niners play defense, bootlegging does work against them because they hard charge with their defensive ends down the line of scrimmage. But you typically have to be really, you kind of have to be a little bit run heavy to sell some of that stuff. They will roll out Pat Mahomes a couple times a game, but the reason why I don't think they do it as often as one is because they don't need to. He's good in the pocket. Two is that it limits the route choices. When you roll out, there's only a couple routes that you can run, and pretty much any defender knows what they are. Now, that doesn't mean they don't work. They work all the time. And I don't think they need to do it. It's not part of their offense. And like I said, the ability of Pat to break contain and throw the football is what is better than him running the ball. Obviously, you gain more yards if you pass the ball. The Niners pass rush, and we'll spend plenty of time Thursday, next Tuesday, next Thursday. I'll tweet about it. I'll write about it. They're going to have to be very good in their rush lanes. They're going to have to rush basically down the middle of the Chiefs defenders and then pick a side and allow yourself to hit Pat. The thing what Pat does too as well, and this is something that the Niners will study this, I assume, is he doesn't run the football very often up the middle of the field. He's only going to run the ball if he breaks contain.
Right.
And so they're going to have to rush accordingly. Like the Texans rushed way too high and wide up the field. And so like the left tackle or right tackle would just push the defender by and Pat would step up and out, you know, up, you know, kind of up in the pocket, out down the line of scrimmage. Where if you have a four-man rush, that's harder to do. And Pat is not a guy that typically takes off down the middle of the field because he knows there's guys coming to hit him from that direction. He can control his environment when he's out of the pocket. Plus, if he moves out of the pocket, it allows himself opportunities to throw the ball down the field, which he did all game. And so he's not a guy. So if the Niners kind of can rush, and you can do this, there's ways to do it, and you basically just bull rush everyone. You just rush down the middle of everyone, try to push everyone back and constrict the pocket from the middle. And then you can force Pat to be uncomfortable, and then you can make a late second move to get off the offensive lineman and get to Pat. I will say, to your point, you mentioned earlier, the speed of the Niners defense is elite. It's really elite. And the closing speed of Dee Ford, especially Bosa, Buckner, Armstead, Thomas, all those guys, the linebackers, the closing speed is different than most teams. And that's something to watch. If Pat does break the pocket, how do they close on Pat Mahomes and make plays against him? So this is a really early preview, in my opinion, of the game I'm going to give you right now. We often talk about offense in these situations, right? The best offense. And these offenses are very well deserving of praise. The best defense will win the game. Whoever gets two or three stops will win the game. And actually, it's interesting. If you look, and this is a very broad look at the Super Bowls the last 10 or so years, typically the quarterback who is playing better in that season has the lesser defense, and they actually lose this game quite often. It's interesting to look at that. If you look at like the last 10 years where the better quarterback that season doesn't mean, you know, Matt Ryan was better than Tom Brady in 16. Doesn't mean Brady is worse than Matt Ryan. That year, Matt Ryan won the MVP. They lost. Cam Newton lost as the MVP. There's arguments to me, you know, Tom Brady lost to Nick Foles. It's really interesting to look at the Super Bowl, how things are different defensively. We have 2 weeks to prepare for this, obviously. I think Pat is a transcendent talent, but I do wonder how the Niners spend the 2 weeks preparing for this offense.
It's a great point. You know, our buddy Dave Damashek brought it up on his show yesterday, Football Fact Check with The Athletic, that the defenses, when you have all-time offense versus all-time defense, or at least top defenses and offense, defenses, something like 6-0 when you're looking at the number one or two versus the number one or two. Yeah. That's a scary stat if you're a Chiefs fan. Now, I will say this. One thing we know we're going to see, and we'll move to other topics soon. One thing I know we're going to see is two extremely fast offenses. So we got a cool stat here. Zuri found it, but it comes from Dave Lombardi, a colleague here at The Athletic. The two highest average max speeds as ball carriers on offensive plays this year come from the Chiefs and the Niners. The guys with the ball in their hands, the Tyreek Hills of the world, or you go over to your boy Deebo Samuel, and now Mostert's coming on the scene. Like, these dudes are all fast. So what does that do? When obviously the Niners have the better statistical defense, but what does it do when everyone on the field is world-class sprinter speed? What does that do to defense?
Well, there's just no surprises. And I think that, you know, because the Chiefs defense plays against the speed and the Niners defense plays against the speed, it should help them prepare for when they play each other. But it also means there's big plays capable at any time, right? You can take a short pass and get a long gain. You know, if you're the Chiefs, obviously you can go deep to Watkins, go deep to Hill, and get a big play. There's big play opportunities at all times. Now, the Niners aren't necessarily built on that in the pass game. We'll talk about them in just a second. The Chiefs definitely are.
Okay. Well, we've talked a lot about Patrick Mahomes, and I think you've said that having him find opportunities to run and or at least fake like he's going to run could be good for the offense. So you're not necessarily co-signing saying.
Yeah, I wouldn't make him a runner, but I think what he does outside the pocket is great because, again, he looks to throw the ball first. And a lot of those times, those are the big plays, right? The one to Sammy Watkins was a huge play. And they're also back-breaking plays to the defense because the defense sort of thinks like, okay, we got him, right? He's on the run. We're going to get him. And boom, deep play, touchdown, game over. I mean, you saw Vrabel's face afterwards. He knew it was over right then.
Yep, he did. And I guess one of the things that makes me a little nervous is that the Chiefs don't appear to know what to do in the first quarter of any game this playoffs. They're very good in the second half. They're very good in the second quarter. I don't know what's going on in the first quarter. What's Andy doing to get them ready?
It's interesting because they're normally really good in the first 15. Then they've actually been This year during the regular season, they were really good to start games and kind of actually worn out as the game went forward. So I don't know how. I don't know why, honestly. I mean, I wouldn't get behind against the Niners, but I said the same thing against the Titans. I mean, they're just finding enough ways to win, and that's really all that matters, obviously, in the end.
All right. Before we shift to one of those other teams that we just talked about, we came across a tweet, I think Zuri found this, from at PFF Chiefs, and damned if I know what these stats mean, but you're the stats guy on this show.
Mitch had his best game of the season.
I didn't even know they kept offensive linemen stats. Can you explain? Congrats to Mitch on getting there.
Well, I don't know.
What did he do so well?
Oh, he just balled out. The Titans' defensive ends were no challenge for him. He did his best game of the year. He played great in the run game, pass game. PFF obviously graded it, but it was clear from watching the game. I had a buddy text me and was like, "This is the best game Mitch has played all year." And I was like, "Yeah, probably so." Now, he's going to have to bring it this week. He's got a little different challenge. The guys he played against this week were no match for him. It's hard to play against my brother. And if you are not very good, you don't stand a chance.
Okay. But he's played against J.J. Watt, all-timer, and he shut him down.
Yeah,
and
he's played better against some better opponents, if that makes sense. He's played well against Bosa this year and Watt this year and Von Miller. But I think he just dominated the other day because he just was better than anyone they had. He played really well.
They call that the clutch gene, Jeff. And you've got it. You've got it too.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I have some great podcasts, so I agree.
Look, I think
this is an important one today, and I'm crushing it so far.
So far, you're killing it, man, but it's just the first quarter. Let's move to the second quarter. Listen, all the headlines after the Niners beat Aaron Rodgers were about Aaron Rodgers, were about Jimmy G getting his first Super Bowl. We're about the Niners run game. Obviously, congrats to Raheem Mostert. Great story there. It was about the young defense and all these future Hall of Famers that they've got rushing quarterbacks. It was about the young coach, the genius Kyle Shanahan, son of a great. It was a whole lot of praise for everyone in the organization. What I didn't hear much of was people praising the GM, John Lynch. Okay? Here's what I don't understand. It's only 3 years ago this guy took the job after being a broadcaster and being a Hall of Fame level player. Why isn't the takeaway from this game that more smart, hardworking players should become GMs in this league? We're talking about, we got to do more like Shanahan. We got to do more like Jimmy G. We got to do more of this, more of this. Why isn't anyone saying we got to do more like that, like John Lynch just did? A player who really understands what it takes to fit in a locker room and be a great football player. Why aren't more guys like that making decisions in the draft, free agency, and in shaping personnel for a team?
I think it's very hard for players to assume that role because a lot of times, we don't evaluate, like, I'm an offensive lineman. I'm not evaluating, like, secondary players while I'm playing, right? So you obviously have to learn more about the game. But I think it's hard for the greats to evaluate players that aren't as good as them. And it's a tough situation to do that. And you have your bias about the way the game should be played. This is the way the game should be played, and we're going to do it this way. And when obviously the game has changed the way that it's played now. So I think that's probably why. But I also think that players don't want, like, I don't want to be a coach and scout and spend hours as a general manager. I don't want to do that. I want to stay at home and record podcasts in my underwear. Like, I don't want to have to go do that job.
Well, okay.
I'd be a great offensive line coach. I'd be a great scout. I don't want to do any of that. Like, I want to sit at home and record podcasts all day. I think that's part of it too, is that there's plenty of players that would love to coach, but the hours are awful.
All right, but so you're in the camp that you did your time, you made some money, you've got other interests. It's not for you. Football was a great chapter in your life. Now you want to do other things. You talk about football, you watch football, but you got other stuff going on. That's clearly not the case for John Lynch. He played, you know, over a decade in the league. Then he goes into broadcasting right away. He covers the league for almost another decade with Fox and others. And then he finally gets his chance. And, you know, John Elway was helpful in that process. John Elway, by the way, pretty successful, you know, front office guy as an all-time player, as another example. And so now Lynch gets into the game. He's still a young man. He's three seasons in. These are all dudes he drafted. Guys like Raheem Mostert are people he picked up off, you know, no offense to Raheem, like the trash pile of the NFL, essentially. This is he's got Jimmy G, who's sitting on the bench, very little tape of him. He turns him into, you know, potentially a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Like, it just, if you are stuck on the game, if you want to be part of it, if you have a work ethic, why aren't teams just giving the job to a guy like him more often? Why is this going to dudes with Excel sheets and MBAs? Why is this considered like a management job?
Well, I mean, this is actually about analytics, right? And I think the Niners do use analytics as well.
I think you need
to have a blend of it both. I do not think like the Browns' idea of Paul DePodesta being in charge of everything is going to work. And you have to be able to have a blend of football minds and scouts that watch the tape, but also use the analytics as part of your player evaluation and kind of your game plan. And so the Niners, I think, have found a really good way to make that happen. But I also think what's important here is that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, the head coach, are on the same page of the players they want for this team. A lot of times, general managers do not sign players that fit the scheme that their coaches are employing. And that's not the case with John Lynch. John Lynch went and got Emmanuel Sanders. Hey, coach, I need a speedy, John, I need a speedy wide receiver. Go get me one for my offense. Boom, he got him, right? Like, he's able to get the guys that they need for the team that match what they do. Hey, we're going to play a lot of zone coverage. I need pass rushers. Pass rushers, please. And they got pass rushers, right? They got Bosa. Now, obviously, they got Bosa because they were crummy last year because Jimmy G was hurt. So they kind of fell into that. But they went and got D Ford, right? I need pass rushers. Give me pass rushers. And that, to me, is what sets Lynch apart of other GMs. That's what the Patriots have done so well for so long. It's what Brett Veach in Kansas City is doing well. They're going ahead and they need to follow that plan more than just hiring like an ex player. I think it's more about just building the roster with players that fit the scheme of what the coach is trying to do.
Okay, so that's a great point, and I think it might help what I'm saying. Doesn't that mean that a former player and a coach have a shorthand, a shared language? Like what you just described, imagine that conversation, play it out a little bit further. Isn't that an easier conversation between two guys who really understand the X's and O's and who really know what it's like to be in those meetings all week long? Isn't that an easier explanation between Shanahan and a guy he can relate to because he was a player not long ago versus Shanahan and a guy who kind of thinks he's Shanahan's boss, who kind of is worried about cap space and thinking about this thing an agent said, and he's just thinking about all the other crap that people like me get to think about instead of just thinking about, like, how's this guy evaluate tape? How is he in a meeting? How is he on the field in certain situations and certain schemes?
Yes, I think that, again, it you can have like an analytics guy work in that situation if him and the coach are on the same page about getting players. I mean, I think it can be. It doesn't have to be John Lynch, the ex player. It can be analytics guy, but I think far too often those guys are at odds with the general man with the coach when it's that heavily based. Right, we saw that with Sashi Brown with the Browns. Again, I think it's about a mix, dude. I do think that watching the film and being able to work in players into the offense and defense you employ is more important than just one thing. Like, it's more important than just having an ex player or having a full analytics team as your general manager.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, the blend is right. I guess my only point is that when we're going to transition to the next topic, this is a copycat league. If I was looking to copycat something from this Niners run, it would not be find me some Jimmy G clone or find me a bunch of average running backs to stick in here or find me a bunch of defensive ends like this. It would be find me a really smart, hardworking former player who's going to communicate well with my coach. But that would be how I would build my team.
Yeah, but I don't know how many players want that job. Like, I think I'd be a good coach. I think I'm a good scout. I mean, obviously general manager. I don't know if I'm ready for that quite yet, but I don't want that job. A lot of us don't want that job. I think it's hard to find smart players who even want that gig.
All right. Well, I mean, just we'll use a guy who we've referenced before, who we think of as a smart guy, who's obviously a hardworking guy, a guy like Dan Orlovsky, who can obviously break down tape all day long.
Yes.
He's smart enough to learn the business side, too.
He is. And Dan, it was reported this weekend, has some coaching offers. So we'll see if he does take that role.
Well, okay, so maybe coaching's a better path for him. But I just think it's interesting that nobody questions, oh, guy was great player in his day. Maybe he was a great college player, never quite made in the NFL, but he was always smart. He's a great coaching candidate. Let's make him the offensive coordinator. One day he'll be the head coach. You see that path all the time. You don't see the path of players going from player to scout to GM or whatever that path is. You don't see it as often as I think John Lynch is proof that it can work. That's all. So let's talk about the other things that people are going to steal. We'll have 2 weeks, as you know, to preview this game. You'll do it more than almost anyone else with better insight than almost anyone else. I'm going to throw at you some very simplistic takes, the types of things that you're going to hear in these tail of the tapes all week long. And I want to know if maybe there's some truth to some of this, okay? So this could be a game that dictates style, what people steal from for years to come. If you believe in what I think, then you're seeing, okay, do I want a playmaker at quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, or do I want more of a game manager at quarterback like Jimmy G? You could make an argument for either. The winner will help decide. You could argue I want a dominant run game. My focus is the run. I'm going to run it on first down every time. Or just barely ever touch a run game. Have a few guys who can run it when you need it, like the Chiefs. Do you want... Here's a good one. Do you want an old school football coach like Andy Reid or a new school genius like Kyle Shanahan?
Kyle Shanahan, continue. I'm about to blow up this whole thing. But
I know. I'm looking forward to it. And then the last one. Do you want a blocking first tight end who's also a great athlete who can catch the ball, or a receiver who can block when he needs to like Travis Kelce? So Kittle versus Kelce. There's a lot of A versus B. Feel free to explode the entire thing, but it seems to me whoever wins this game is going to set some trends for a few years to come.
These teams are a lot more related than you think they are. First of all, Shanahan and Andy Reid are old school coaches, right? They have coached their entire lives. They're grinders. They design game plans with a purpose, with a mission. They value physical football. They value matchups. They create situations for success for their players. They attempt to not put their players in bad situations. They're innovators. They have different styles of the way they call games, but both of them work, and they both tailor their teams, which is the most important thing, in my opinion, to what they do best. And the Chiefs are great at passing the football, so they pass the football. The Niners are good at running the football. They run the football. I will say this, and it's a talking point that is seriously frustrating me. You know, Jimmy G was 6-for-8 the other day. He's not thrown, I think he's completed like 17 passes in 2 games in the playoffs. And everyone said, well, he's just a game manager. I mean, maybe, certainly you could say that. But dude, he's had multiple times this year where he's shown that he has the ability to put up a lot of yards in big games and win the game for you. The Seattle game, week 17. The Saints game, he did against the Rams this year. He did against the Cardinals this year. There's plenty of times this year, folks, when Jimmy G has been the guy for the Niners. He didn't have to be the last couple weeks. He will probably have to be this week because they have to keep up with the Chiefs. And so that's a talking point I just do not understand, because unlike Ryan Tannehill, who in his career had never done it, even this year, there's no Ryan Tannehill game when you're like, wow, they beat a good team because Ryan Tannehill was playing great. Jimmy G has shown he can do it. And he will have to do it this weekend, or 2 weekends, I should say. And so I just think it's a foolish argument to say that Jimmy G can't do it in this situation, because he can't. I think these teams are a lot closer related than we think they are. They both traded for defensive end to rush the passer. And they're both built with speed. They have great offensive tackles. Yeah, they go about the quarterback differently. I think Jimmy G would do great in San Francisco, and Pat would do great in Jimmy G would do great in Kansas City, and Pat would do great in San Francisco. No one's going to copy theirs, and teams have already started to copy the West Coast, West Coast offense, what Andy Reid is doing. People have done the Shanahan offense now. That's all over the NFL. And so I don't think it'll be a copycat game. I think the teams are very balanced, and that's the goal, trying to find balance.
Okay, so you just completely blew apart two of the things that I said. We're left with running backs and tight ends.
Well, running backs don't matter. I mean, we've been over this many times. I mean, look, you have 2 7th-round draft picks or undrafted guys starting in this game. Modster has been in this is 7th team in the NFL. Now, the tight end's interesting. So Kelce, when he was younger, was Kittle. He was a great blocker. Maybe not as great as Kittle. And he could, run. Now he's a little older. He's not the same player. But he's an outstanding pass catcher and probably a Hall of Famer as well. I mean, I think George Kittle, to me, being able to block. Remember, though, is that if he was in a different offense, he would not be asked to block. I mean, he's asked to block because this is their offense. They run the football. And obviously, I think they do it because Kittle can block really well. So there's, to me, just being an all-around player is more important in that position. It also depends on what you're trying to do with your tight end. If you're trying to be more of a passing team, and yeah, you might want a big, tight end who's a wide receiver. If you want to run the ball more, then you might want George Kittle. I think it just depends on what your offense is. No right or wrong, in my opinion, there.
Okay, well, so a couple parts of that then. Do you think he will remain the type of player we see him now as, or will you know, a Super Bowl ring and Pro Bowls and, you know, the ease of being a pass catcher instead of having to block all the time start to get to him? Will we see George Kittle be the grinder he is today that we love for five more years? Or is he going to go, wait a minute now, I could do it the way Kelsey does it and turn into that player?
He will probably keep this up as long as he can, especially in this offense. Okay. And we can't anymore, though, you know, they'll transition to a more of a wide receiver role and put someone else, you know, draft someone else for that spot.
All right, one other comparison that's maybe too simplistic. So I think you've basically told me that all the simple narratives we're going to hear, especially the old school coach versus new school coach and the playmaker versus the game manager, those two, which will lead every stupid pregame show, you're saying are basically nonsense. So
yes,
that's good. So everyone listening who gets to watch those shows, you can roll your eyes along with me and Jeff on those points. Here's one that I do think, though, will get less time discussed, but actually is a real comparison. You talk a lot about personnel, you know, the 11 personnel, 13 personnel. It was something you taught us all over the course of the last bunch of episodes. What about the fullback position? They've got a great fullback in San Francisco. I don't think there's anything even resembling a fullback on the Chiefs roster. That extra guy would always be another receiver, you know, would always be something to widen the field. What about that difference?
I mean, Richard Sherman is on the Chiefs, and he's made multiple Pro Bowls. They just haven't used him as much this year.
He's
still there. What? The sausage. Richard Sherman.
Okay, see, we're learning things now. I'm thinking about Richard Sherman, the defensive back, but you're talking about a guy.
Anthony Sherman.
Thank you. Okay.
Sorry, Anthony Sherman. My fault. Anthony Sherman.
Zuri and I were furiously Googling who that guy is.
Anthony Sherman, the sausage.
The sausage is... yeah, someone I don't know anything about, because my point is there's no fullback out there.
So last year, he's made many Pro Bowls. Last year.
Congrats to Richard or Anthony Sherman.
It's Anthony Sherman. I love Anthony, too. He's a great. I'm excited to see him next week. He caught a touchdown pass on a go route the first game of 2018 against the Chargers. It was incredible.
Okay.
I loved it.
How come? I mean, here's the thing. We hear about, and I can't pronounce the man's name, but we hear about the fullback in San Francisco constantly.
Juice.
We hear about him constantly. Never hear about the sausage. Why is
that? Because they don't use Anthony Sherman the way they use Juice.
So do you think more teams, let's say, again, play this forward, the Niners win. I'm sorry to you and Mitch. The Niners have just won. They're celebrating, and everyone in the league is going, what the hell worked for them? And somebody goes, damn fullback was leading, you know, Mostert ran for 300 yards. It's the fullback.
No, I don't think so, because you also have to emulate that running style. You have to run outside zone, have a fullback that can do both, and have a fullback that, by the way, can catch passes. I mean, he's out in the backfield catching screens and down the middle of the field running seam routes, and it's hard to find that guy. There's no fullbacks anymore. So I know it's a copycat league, but you have Andy Reid with a quarterback like Pat Mahomes. You can't really copy him. And then you have, a fullback that doesn't really exist anymore, with a play caller that's rare for his ability to call plays in this manner. And it's hard to copy these teams.
Okay. Let me ask you this last question, and then we'll move to a topic that I think will explode your brain. We're seeing the game change a little bit. We're seeing positions we grew up on no longer exist or exist very differently. I'm thinking about, you know, those Cowboys teams of our youth. And it was very obvious, you know, they had certain personnel for certain things, and now those guys just don't play that way any longer.
Yeah.
I'm curious, if you're a high school kid now, starting out on what would hopefully be an NFL career one day, and you've got the body and the speed and all the things you need to be a good college football player, are those types of guys being steered towards, let's say, pass-catching tight end positions and away from other positions? Could they be steered away from running back and towards some defensive position for the reasons that you're identifying?
Yeah, why would you want to play running back now?
I have no idea.
So you play wide receiver. Play defensive back.
If you can get away with it, why not?
Yeah.
All right, well, so you think that's happening already and will continue. So we'll see less elite athletes come out as running backs and maybe more as tight ends or defensive backs.
Yes.
Okay. I'll look forward. Well, we'll never know, of course, but it does seem like right now you'd be foolish to bet your whole life and career on being a franchise running back in the NFL. That just doesn't seem worth it. All right, last one for the first part of the show. We'll call this our fourth quarter, so it's fitting that we're talking about Captain Clutch here, the comeback kid. Drives me crazy to bring this up, but I will. So UFC president, Patriots super fan Dana White says Tom Brady to the Raiders has legs. All right, take a listen to ESPN Radio in Vegas just after Brady and Dana hung out at the Conor McGregor fight this weekend. Take a listen.
And I said to him, is this your speculation that you think it's a good idea? Or is this the fact that, by the way, you talk to Tom Brady like 3 times a week? So do you know this? Or is this you, just you thinking it's a good idea? He stopped, smiled, and he said, you know what I know. Which is basically, I think, his way of saying, you know that I talk to Tom Brady all the time. In fact, I think we've told the story on the air that one time I was doing an interview with him. I took a shot at Tom Brady, and then he stopped the interview and FaceTimed Tom Brady and said, hey, this guy was just talking trash about you. And I was like, okay, that was not necessary. I'm telling this story.
That was not necessary.
I'm telling this story right. To relate that he's tight with Tom Brady like that. They are very, very close. Last night they were hanging out the whole time. And I'm sure everybody has seen the photo now of Tom Brady meeting with Mark Davis last night. John Gruden was also there about 3 rows behind me. So listen, am I reporting that Tom Brady's coming to the Raiders?
Yes.
No. 100% no.
Okay, that's ESPN Radio in Vegas with a pretty clear explanation of Dana White seemingly winking at the idea that Tom could be going to Las Vegas to join the Raiders. Go.
Yeah, Dana White's who I take my football news from. I cannot see Tom Brady playing for a team that does not have a chance to win a Super Bowl next year, and the Raiders do not.
Why?
Because their defense is awful, and they're playing the Chiefs division. They're not winning, and the Broncos are going to be good next year. Drew Lock's going to be good. He's not moving to the AFC. He's not moving to play in Vegas for John Gruden. It's not going to happen, folks. I know it's fun to talk about this. In my opinion, there's two spots he's going. Three, I guess, if the Cowboys thing, but I don't see that happening anymore. Nashville or staying in New England. That's it. He ain't going to Vegas.
Okay, but he doesn't talk to that many people. One of the people he talked to, we know he talks to, is Dana White. There's a whole weird little group of people that have a few things in common. Leave the politics out, but they like the UFC and the New England Patriots. They got a third thing they love, and they all talk a lot. Don't you think that Dana might know something that the rest of us don't know? Like, isn't he in the trust tree?
He's not a trust tree.
So who's in the trust tree? How are we going to find out the truth about this? I hear your point. You think the Titans could be a fit. I get it. It looks even more likely after the run they were on. And you've said for weeks now that you think he's actually party's over. He's staying in New England. They'll patch things up. But why is this so absurd? Like, I get it. Dana White pops off a lot about his fighters to promote his fights. But why would he be so way off on this notion about Tom Brady? He spent the night hanging out with him. And by the way, look at Tom Brady. Go search Tom Brady and the McGregor fight. You're not going to see a guy who looks like he was completely of clear mind. I think he was enjoying the fight in a few ways. So he might have just said some stuff.
I do not think that Tom Brady is seriously talking to Dana White about his plans for next year. I don't think he even knows his plans for next year yet. I mean, if Jay Glazer said this, I'd be like, yeah, Jay probably knows what's happening. Dana White has no idea what's happening.
If Jay Glazer says it, it's because he's in that same little group I'm talking about. Those guys
all
talk.
Dana White's not in the NFL breaking news group.
You don't have to be sometimes.
Dana White's just saying this so people talk about Dana White. If he's wrong about this, nothing happens to him. Nothing whatsoever.
I don't know. That wouldn't make him happy. He's a Boston guy. He loves the Patriots. He loves Tom Brady being in New England. I don't see why he'd be rooting for this. Okay.
This is a silly topic. Yeah. He's not going to the Vegas Raiders because, and by the way, they don't even know if they're going to play there next year because their roof's not finished yet.
Huh?
Yeah, you see that? The roof is not going to be finished at the time that they don't think.
Well, I mean, Tom Brady doesn't need a roof. That's
they might
all
not
the
play
more
in
reason.
Vegas. They might not play in Vegas next year if their stadium's not ready.
Tom Brady can play in a broken down stadium. That guy can win anyway.
Yeah, I could just see Tom Brady playing in the StubHub Center. He's going to love it there.
All right, fair enough. We're going to move along to move the line. This is our little over-under game. Some of these are close enough to real this week, Jeff. I try to be fair. We're going to save most of the good stuff about the Super Bowl prop picks. We're going to get to all of that. I promise anyone who's listening is like, what the hell? Talk more about the big game. Yeah, we got a lot to go here, guys. So let's talk about a few other topics hitting the football world right now. I want to know, Jeff, after everything we saw this postseason, a nice run during the regular season, a great run in the postseason, Titans wins next year. Over under 9.5. They were 9-7 this year.
I'm going to go with under here because I don't think Ryan Tannehill will duplicate the same success that he had this year. Against the better teams they played, he really didn't do very much. They lost those games, obviously notwithstanding the playoffs. And Derrick Henry, they're going to pay him too, and it's going to be a wreck. It's going to be a disaster. I'd go under. They remind me a lot of these other teams we've seen, the Jets in 2009 and 10, the Jaguars, they were hot 2 years ago in the playoffs and came back next year, won four games. I can't see it. I'm going under.
Okay. Under like disappointing season or wins?
Maybe 7, 8, 9 wins, not over 9.5.
Okay. Because they've been 9-7, I think, for four straight seasons. Yeah. Four straight seasons. Very confirmed. So, I mean, under could be 9 wins, could get you in the playoffs, could have you make another hot run. You're saying probably not even that. Unless they sign Tom Brady, of course.
Yes.
What if Dana White had said he's going to Nashville?
I believe that.
So there he would be credible. Then you would have said, okay, that's good sourcing. I like where Dana's friends with him. You're poo-pooing it because Dana said Vegas.
Yes.
Oh, God. Jeff. All right, number two here. Aaron Rodgers' remaining playoff games in his career, over under 1.5.
Remaining, there's playoff games in general?
What? No. Yeah, I want to know how many playoff games will happen while Aaron Rodgers is alive.
I thought you meant win playoff games. Oh, I would say that he'll play in over 1.5. He might not win over 1.5, but he's going to play. I mean, he'll make the playoffs, and I would say, let's say two out of the next 4 years he makes the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
So I would say, I think he's done winning Super Bowls. I think he's done going to the Super Bowl.
Okay, so no more deep runs for Aaron Rodgers. You think he keeps on he keeps on playing, first of all. He's about 36 years old. So you think he's got a few more years in him. You think he's got a few more playoff runs in him, but those playoff runs aren't deep? That's basically the takeaway?
Yes.
So you didn't see this year as a huge success for the Packers with a brand new coach and parts that are still coming together? That maybe next year they could even be better than a very good year?
I just don't know. I think Rodgers is at the point of his career now, Gabe, where he needs to have all the pieces in place to win. And if they're short a couple wide receivers, the run game is not working, the defense doesn't play well that week, he can't make up the difference anymore.
Okay, well, I would imagine that all of the offseason, the draft and all of free agency, will be about beefing up that defense to stop the run and giving Aaron one or two things he asks for. But basically, it's going to be about making sure that they don't get gashed for another 250 yards by some guy no one's ever heard of. And if they can do that, it seems to me that Aaron Rodgers at 36, which is the new 30, and a new coach who's got a year under his belt, they're more likely to maintain or improve than some of the other top teams in the NFC who look likely to regress. We've talked about Drew Brees and his Hall of Fame career. I can't see them doing that again. Listen, the Niners are on a hell of a run. Are we sure they're going to be this again next year? You've pretty much told us the Seahawks are a mess. They're not going to be able to do it again unless Russell pulls another rabbit out of his ass. Like, who out there, the Vikings overperformed, like, who out there is going to supplant the Packers?
Well, I think the Bears get a quarterback that could be involved. I mean, the Eagles are going to be good forever with Wentz. I mean, the Cowboys can be good. I think the Reds, I think there's a lot of teams that have chances to be there. I think the pieces have got to be in place for Rodgers to win all these games. And if they're not, and people said this year that they're one of the most overrated 14-3 teams ever, it bared out to be kind of the fact, I think, when you watch that championship game.
All right. Let's talk about something that maybe this could be when you lose your mind. I thought the UFC reporting topic was going to be when you blew up your brain, but here it is.
Can I share a funny UFC story really quick from this weekend?
Please, because you're going to need a little breather before the next
one. I saw the next topic, yeah. My answer's going to be short on that one, don't worry. Even though I know you want it to be long, I'm gonna fool you. So this weekend, I know nothing about UFC, right? I knew Conor fought someone this weekend. His name's Cowboy, I guess. I had no idea. So Saturday, I get a call from it's about 4:30, I get a call from my ESPN radio boss. Hey, what are you doing right now? I'm like, I'm just hanging out. I'm going to dinner with my wife soon. All right. Hey, our UFC show can't connect. Can you host? Can you come on and like do a show till 7? And I was like, about UFC? He goes, no, just like football. I said, fine. So I get online, and then my co-host Myron Metcalf, who I do Sundays with, is on too, and we're talking. Myron's a big boxing MMA guy.
Yeah.
He's excited for the fight that night. And so we're going to talk football. And then the host of the MMA show is going to call in, they said, and we're going to like do an MMA show with him on the phone. And I go, guys, I'm not doing this show. I'm going to leave if we do this show. I know nothing about MMA. Like, I cannot participate in a show about something that I can't even fake. Like, I can't even fake it. I can't fake it at all. And luckily, they got their connection figured out, and Myra and I didn't even have to work. But that would have been a two-hour disaster for me.
Well, I know this to be true because you and I have a history of doing gambling talk at a previous stop. And whenever those topics came up, whenever it was like, all right, one of the things we want to do is get your bets on a UFC fight this weekend, you were always like, oh, no. I'd be flushing my money down the toilet.
Yeah, oh, I'd just be like, I'd let Paul do it or it's a blackjack. Someone else do it, right? Like, I'm not taking that topic. Like, you have to take that topic. I do a lot of stuff. I know nothing about the fight world. I saw Conor broke his nose in 45 seconds. Like, I saw the highlights. And the funny part is my co-host on my Pac-12 show, Sean O'Connell, I work with him every day for 2 years now. He's an MMA fighter. He won $1 million in the PFL 2 years ago. He calls fights on ESPN and ESPN2 and ESPN Plus for PFL. We talk about MMA all the time on like in the breaks. And I still know nothing. Like, Sean has tried to teach me. I still can't talk about it. It's really funny.
Well, okay, I'll tell you what. This will be for the off season. We're going to spend a little time. We got some good fights coming up. Connor's back. There's going to be
Connor and Floyd are fight soon, aren't they?
Well, that would be boxing if they fought. Yeah. That doesn't matter. The Khabib fight is the one you need to get smart on. So we're going to study up together.
Let's do it.
You might not get smarter on it, but the audience right now, this is the call to action, everyone. Make Jeff a little bit smarter about UFC. Okay, he's a smart dude. He just doesn't have, he has a blind spot. So help him out. Tweet him some interesting stuff about UFC. Give him something to read. Let's move to the next topic. I want to know, more hours of Odell Beckham Jr. coverage you can take, over under 0.5, 30 minutes more.
I'm going to say under 0.5. His PR people were very bright to put that video out of him holding that baby on the airplane. I'll tell you that.
I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, so after being able to click. After the whole, like, you know, LSU game, blah, 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 they just, like, there's a video of him the next day on an airplane, like getting a baby to stop crying. And then that was it. And then we haven't heard from Odell since then.
Was he holding it one-handed?
No, so no, like an actual baby, and he was, like, rocking it, and it was like, getting quiet. It's funny.
Probably because his hangover was so intense
that
he was like, give me that kid. Let me deal with this. I can't take the crying any longer. And then they turned that into, look, he's not a maniac. He's a nice guy. I've noticed that the coverage of OBJ has become about the coverage of OBJ. And now I'm three levels into the meta here with us talking about the people talking about him. It seems like everyone is saying he's not the problem. We are the problem for talking about him. And I'm just curious how you react to that theory. I've seen a lot of guys say that. Oh, it's not him. It's us being obsessed with him. We're to blame for his behavior. Is that
Odell's behavior?
Yeah.
That's silly. People just want to say that. No, Odell, his behavior, grabbing the megaphone, yelling into it, slapping an officer on the butt. It's his behavior that I don't like this. I don't like how we do that. Odell's polarizing. So his behavior is going to be, and I get it. Odell's not really done anything. He's not broken the law. I mean, he hasn't done any of that crazy stuff. He's not got in trouble very much off the field. I get all that. So I understand where people are coming from, where that is definitely true, but he's a polarizing guy, and everything he does is going to be recorded and going to be talked about. And just like every news, I mean, we're bringing it back up today. I mean, no one talks about Odell all weekend. So, it goes away pretty fast. All this stuff is 24-hour cycle, man. I mean, I might have a bad tweet, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bad tweet. I don't like it. And then, like, 7 minutes later, no one's tweeting me about it, right? The cycle goes so fast that it after 24 hours, no one's talking about Odell anymore.
Well, you're probably right. And in this case, the biggest conflict he created was that, you know, he slapped a cop on the butt in the LSU locker room. And, you know, it was obvious he wasn't trying to like hurt the cop or anything. He definitely shouldn't have done it. It was stupid and it was caught on video, but the cop and the police department are not going to press charges. So like, he's not in any legal jeopardy over this. He's only guilty of being kind of an idiot and kind of an egomaniac and maybe getting in the way of some kids' good time. So what I would say is we can all put it to rest. Someone just needs to remind him and everyone else out there who gets talked about a lot, it's going to be on video. Whatever you do when you leave your house is going to be on video. So if you don't want to have to apologize for it, don't do it. Simple as that. That's the only thing. Like, otherwise, we're going to force that damn apology out of you. Someone out there is going to make you say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. So either don't do it or don't leave your house. I mean, that's the unfair reality of being these guys. It's not fair.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, that's our life in the spotlight.
Yep. That's it.
Odell seems like he likes being famous, though. I don't really feel bad for him.
He does. Okay. So same question. How many more hours of coverage can you take about Joe Burrow? Over under 0.5.
I mean, we're going to get a lot of it.
It's been, oh my. Every minute that wasn't spent on OBJ was him.
But he skipped the Senior Bowl, so we won't get much this week.
You know he likes smoking cigars?
I do, yeah. I mean, he was barely smoking them. I don't think
he's ever smoked one before.
Yeah, I like a good cigar, and that seemed like he had never had a cigar before.
Most of those players
didn't seem like they had a cigar before.
Because why would they? Because cigars are like a weird old man thing. And let's be honest, we've all smoked cigars thinking we look cool with our friends, but you don't look cool. They don't taste great. Like,
There's a couple that do taste good. We won't get it, whatever.
I won't name the guy. He's a former NBA player. This was like the coolest, could have been the coolest night of my life. I was invited by a guy who does some analyst work to meet him at his cigar bar in Beverly Hills.
Oh, I've been to that. Which one is it?
It's like Old Havana or someplace. I don't know. It's right in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's like some exclusive place.
I think my bachelor party was there. That's where we have a bachelor party.
Oh, okay. So go with me on this. So I get invited to meet him. I'm feeling really sick, but I do want to meet with him and talk some shop a little bit and also just like experience his world. This is very different from how I live my life. So I go meet him and I sit down and he orders me a strong drink. And I say, I'm not much of a cigar smoker, but I'm happy to have one here with you. Please get me something that, you know, is sort of mild, a beginner cigar. And he does. And I take a few puffs on this thing. I mean, listen, I'm happy to admit, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I've had those drunken cigars as a teenager and a college kid, but like, I'm not a cigar smoker. I take a few pulls on this thing. It F's me up more than any other substance I've ever consumed in my life. My head is spinning. One drink and a few pulls on this cigar, and I am out of my mind. And I am trying like hell to look like I've got it together in front of this all-time great. And it was one of the most, like, the hardest I've worked not to humiliate myself in my entire life.
Which cigar do you have?
I have no idea, dude.
So I had when I went there for my bachelor party, I had an Opus X, and they come in, they're seasonal, and they're typically in the winter, but they had some there because it's, you know, all year round at the cigar bar. And dude, they can't give you like a high. It's like 15 minutes typically. This one, dude, I was like almost stumbling down the stairs to the bathroom. Like it wiped me out. This Opus X is awesome. I love it. This is one of my two favorites.
Well,
yeah, it can give you a buzz, man.
I found my way to the bathroom and like put my whole face in the sink.
Oh yeah.
To just try to like sober myself up again. No drugs, barely any alcohol. Just the cigar did this to me.
Yeah. The cigar, especially if you smoke it fast. Oh yeah. So you smoked it right then. Good for you. You weren't Joe Burrow.
I wasn't Joe Burrow. I really gave that thing a pull. Okay. This week, much to most people's surprise, there is some football this weekend. It's the Pro Bowl. I want to know, Jeff, guys who skip the Pro Bowl now that it's not even in Hawaii, it's in Orlando. Guys who skip it, 25% of starters, over under.
Oh, probably a ton already.
Yeah. Well, we're missing out on a bunch of good players, but the two teams who made the Super Bowl are stacked. So we're missing out on a few guys.
My brother was kind of screwed because Mitch, if the Ravens had gone to the Super Bowl, Mitch would have made the Pro Bowl probably because they had the two guys in front of him that were on the team, both tackles.
Right.
Okay, but then when the Ravens lost, obviously those two guys are going now. And then if Mitch had lost on Sunday, he would be out the Super Bowl and out the Pro Bowl. His first Pro Bowl. It was the best alternate he'd been so far.
But he can't go this year, obviously. He's got better things to do.
I think he'd be busy next week. I'm not quite sure, but I think he will be.
Isn't it weird? This is what I'm getting at with this topic. So, for years and years and years, it was in Hawaii. And it seemed like the big stars did go and liked sort of the... It was like a club, like the cigar bar was. Like, these guys could go and hang out and not worry about any cameras or anything going on. They could just hang out with each other and be friends. So, like, you'd hear stories of, you know, Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders and all these guys hanging around the pool. And it was like this kind of safe place back in the 90s, let's say. Now, it feels like it's just a nonstop, you know, camera fest.
That's why, yeah. Things have changed because... of cameras now. Like, you used to be able to go out and no one would record you. and it's just different now. Like, guys are hesitant to go. They do. They go to private rooms and whatnot. Yeah, it changed the dynamic of it.
All right. Well, it is a big bonus check, though. So, you know, going can make you a few grand.
It's not as much as you think.
Well, I'm looking at some numbers here. It feels like a lot of money. Oh,
for players or like the individual players in their contracts or the actual game check?
No, the game check, if you get to the Pro Bowl.
It's 50 and 25, right?
I think it's more now. I think it's more like it's 60-something if you win and almost 40 if you lose.
Yeah, that goes pretty fast when you invite family to that event.
Again,
don't feel sorry for the players. I'm just telling you,
it doesn't cost as much to send people to Orlando as it does to Honolulu.
Oh, of course. Agreed.
Well, okay. So this, it's going to change the dynamics. Listen, I'm not turning my nose up at Orlando in January, by the way. That's a pretty good trip. All right, last one. Jeff, I want to know, how many dress shirts Jeff Schwartz sweats through every day he works in Miami next week? Over under 2.5.
Oh, boy.
How many shirts are you packing for this?
It's one of those things where I'm going Monday. And we got to talk about that off the air, by the way. Monday to Tuesday.
What do we have to talk about off the air?
What I'm doing Monday. We can't let people know yet. It'll be fun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I might have to order some more polos. I might do that right now, actually.
I think you should.
I think it's going to be a polo. I'm on TV one day so far. I might have to be a polo. Like, I might get some Callaway polos. I might look at that right now. It might be a polo type day for me.
For sure you want something. If you can get away with it, you want something without long sleeves. You're in Miami, so you can go. You can go pretty bold.
Dry fit polos are probably the way I'm going to roll here. Here we go. Oh, yeah. I got a bunch of these. Big and tall. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I would pack two. I would just load up two of those per day and be able to swap them out. Because you're also going to be on camera a lot. So you don't want to be in the same, you know, sort of tired old shirt in like five different appearances on, you know, let's say Tuesday. They're going to pop you in there.
I'm not going to change. I'll just wear the same thing for the entire day. I'm not doing that.
Dude, I'm telling you that's a mistake.
I'm only two blocks from my hotel. So I won't sweat very much in the two blocks.
That's completely false. You will sweat endlessly. Every second you're outside, you're going
to
sweat.
It's only supposed to be 75, dude.
It's Miami, man. It's going to be hotter and it's going to feel hotter. I was in New York City in December with you or January with you, and you were sweating there. You're going to be sweating, brother. You need lots of shirts. You should be changing them between segments. It's going to be sticky, brother.
Yeah. I do need to go look at my polo collection. I got three dry fit polos. I'm gonna have to order some more right now, I think.
I'll tell you what, we got some swag we can send you.
Yeah, but it's gotta be the dry fit, man.
Is XL good enough for you, or you need bigger than that? You're a big guy.
XL?
I don't know, man. You're big, so XL is big.
I'm ordering 3X right now.
3X, man.
Look at these different colors. I'm gonna wear like the same. Like, oh, look at this color. That's too bold for Media Row. You gotta be smart with that. You gotta go dark. Darker is possible.
Well, maybe. Bright pops on. Yeah, again, you're in Miami. You can get away with a lot down there.
I do have a pink one I'm going to wear.
There
pink
you go.
Pink and purple one. Okay. Oh, I don't mind. Pink and purple. I'm great in pink and purple. All right, we got to move. We'll move this along.
Okay.
No more rambling about this.
Social mailbag. Here we go. This is usually we try to get some interesting ideas from your fans, things you interact with on Twitter. So I'll read you one from Caleb Kerwin. He says, can we discuss how effing awesome your brother is at football and such? Or is that a familial conflict of interest? I don't think it is. Love on Mitch.
I mean, he's really good. The way he processes the game, his effort, the way he plays. I mean, it's really brilliant to watch him do all this. It's something I can never do. And I've talked to him about the way he plays and what he thinks and how he processes things. It's another level. It's really fun to watch him do it and get after it. And we'll have the first ever interview on Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You with my brother, who 1,000% thinks he's smarter than me. This is going to be an incredible interview. We'll have it next Tuesday, I believe, for our free episode. Excited for this. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm glad he's able to come on. We'll talk a little bit of Schwartz family, but we'll talk a lot about the Chiefs and what the Super Bowl means to him and Pat Mahomes, Andy Reid. It'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
Well, that is a big breaking news. So that would mean potentially that you swap me out for him. And yeah, that does blow things up because he might be smarter than you. I am not. But what if he is? How will you handle that?
He definitely thinks he is. Yeah. And so the question is then, obviously, will I prove that he's not? Which is probably going to happen. Yes, I probably will.
Okay, now this is, I just want to warn you. Usually, us media types love to call distraction to current players who, you know, mess around a little too much before the big game. So, are you willing to risk someone claiming that Mitch was distracted when he was, you know, hobnobbing with celebs like you on a podcast?
No, because believe it or not, this might be recorded not the week of the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Whoa. A little inside information.
All right.
I would not bother him the week of the Super Bowl, folks. We'll get together at some point this week. We'll do it. We'll have it out Tuesday.
All right. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. I'm looking forward to hearing you and Mitch together. Congrats again to him and you for being a good brother, but he's had a hell of a year, and let's see if he can pay it off. We got plenty more Super Bowl talk in the next three shows leading up to the game. We'll be recapping it after. So I'll shut up now to go see if Dana White has any new news on Tom Brady's status. I know I'm curious to see what he has on his reporting, but you can sign us off here, and I'll talk to you again in a few days.
Yeah, thank you guys for joining, as usual. Big show, big week. I'm ready to go. It's going to be a lot of fun in Miami. We'll talk to you guys Thursday. Have a great couple of days. Talk to you guys then.